I'm Mina Starzyak-Hawk, and this is Mina AF, where I answer all of your questions and you can ask me anything.
Can we talk about money?
Can you still breastfeed with implants?
You're both boss moms,
and I'd love to know the story of how you met.
Literally anything any of you want to hear. Listen as we build a community and get to know each other better. Let's talk about microdosing. You know that feeling when your body and mind are really at peace, like after a workout or a nice long shower, where you've relaxed, you're focused, and a little energized? It feels just right, like you're in the zone. Well, microdose can help you not only get into that zone easier, but stay there longer. Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. I absolutely love how helpful these gummies are. For me, half a microdose gummy during the day helps me really stay centered and really fresh as I get everything done on my list. And they really help me relax in the evenings as well and just be present and in the moment instead of worrying about things from the day or what I have to do tomorrow. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com, promo code MINAAF. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com, promo code MINAAF. For 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code MINAAF. Hey guys, hope you made it through Monday okay. Happy Tuesday and welcome back to Mina AF. This week is part two of Sex After with Amy Marks that Steve and I recorded a few weeks ago. I really hope you enjoyed last week's episode. This week's is just as good, so buckle up and here we go.
In Sex After, we are getting raw and honest about the most challenging aspects of sex, intimacy, and relationships after seismic change. This is Amy Marks. We're having intimate and unfiltered conversations with people who've been through life-altering experiences, and I'm finding out what sex and intimacy are like for them in the after. We're getting naked physically and getting naked emotionally. This is Sex After. Welcome back to part two of Sex After Infertility and Grief with my guests, Mina Starzyak-Hawk and Steve Hawk. In this episode, we explore how trauma resides in the body and the importance of health and fitness for our mental state. We talk about the different love languages and attachment styles and how communication is key for all our relationships. Mina and Steve are so open, so authentic, and it was such a joy and honor to have this time with them. We're picking up where we left off with Mina talking about blocking trolls on social media.
Things that come out of people's mouths is amazing to me. And just at like in the last year, I just turned 39. I have really embraced blocking people. Because before it was this competition, again, just with myself, I'm not competing with anyone else. No one even knows there's a competition, but I'm like, I want as many followers and I want to break the 100,000. I want to break the 200,000. And now, and I wouldn't block anyone because I'm like, then it'd be one less follower. And I'm like, block, block, delete, block. Don't need that. And it's been enlightening.
How often a day do you block?
Oh, anytime I get on my phone, probably.
Really?
Like,
really?
Again, I don't like, It'll mainly, it's if we're bored or like, you know, going to the bathroom. I try to be as engaged in my messages as I can to like respond to people. And so I go through a lot of messages to try to get the ones that actually are have any meaning. Right. And I won't even respond. It'll just be some cranky Karen whose picture is a turtle and she has one post saying something rude about something. And I just, it's so quick now, whereas before it would have, you know, you get 100 compliments and one nasty thing and all you're going to remember is the nasty thing.
Isn't that great? Like, what is it about us that we can't hold on? Like,
human beings. Buttons for punishment.
It's just amazing as human beings.
But so now I just go through and I block. And anytime I post something that's controversial, it's a great, it really kind of gets into all the little cracks and crevices and the Karens come out and I get to block 20 of them. And I'm like, okay. If you don't know how to behave here, then you don't get to be here. Go right. Troll someone else.
Right. Troll someone else. I'm taking this back a little bit to resilience and all the trauma that lives in your body. Because, Steve, I just started following Hawk Fit.
I saw.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. He asked me this morning. He was like, are
that was
we?
Last night.
He was like, are we, is the gal's name Amy Marks? And I was like, yeah, why? He said, she just started following Rock
Fit. I did.
How did you put those two together? I don't know.
I did. And we're going to talk because I want to talk to you about your program. But I have, this is my question for you, because this is my belief and I'm curious if you feel the same way. Okay. I really believe that trauma resides in the body.
Oh, 100%.
That no matter what we go through, we can, because believe me, I've been to therapy, all of that. I can talk about things till I'm blue in the face, but my body holds on to that crap. Even if I think I worked through it, all of a sudden my body can just go into panic over certain things. And I'm curious your take on that.
Oh, yes, 100%. And, you know, the body and the brain are connected. When my phone rings,
like his phone, no one ever calls anyone anymore. So if I call him,
if my phone rings, somebody's dead.
Yes.
Cause it's happened 3 times.
So you get that. So
yeah,
that
100% every time my phone rings, and especially if it's a close friend or Mina, you know, if it's like a unknown number or it says spam nowadays, my body doesn't have like that visceral reaction, but if Mina calls me, I'm just prepared for, I've been in a car accident and, you know.
Yeah. How long ago did you get into nutrition and fitness?
Technically, probably five years ago. Like starting school was about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I've always been into it. I've always been more into the fitness than the nutrition. Mm-hmm. And then I realized that you got to have both. So once I got more into the nutrition aspect is when I started seeing changes in my body. So, but I've been licensed for 3 years.
And do you feel that, I mean, a question for you too, because I know if I'm having a really, really hard day, the thing that helps me the most
100%
is working out.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I did my workout after we had our therapy session. It would have been so much easier not to, and to sit on the couch or lay on the bed or stand around. That would have been easy, but I wanted to get those endorphins going, work up a bit.
And I don't know the brain chemistry around it, but there's research behind like physically moving your body helps your brain move forward. Like, you know, there's walking desks at work, like move your body, your brain's going to process better. For me, like if there's something really hard, like I need to put headphones in, zone out, and I walk, I'm not paying attention where I'm going. I'm on autopilot, but I'm moving.
Yeah.
Because like when your body is just stuck, then everything else gets stuck. And it's really hard to get unstuck. I think that's why for so many people, it's hard to kind of take that first step because it's not easy. It's like, you know, I've been doing the same thing of nothing for so long. And it takes a while to feel the benefits, I think, of having your body actively moving and putting good things into your body. And, you know, again, we're just in a world that's so used to like immediate gratification and I can take a pill for this and I, you know, whatever for this, that you have to like do a lot of work. Is not something that, you know, people really want to do. But I've been in phases in my life 100% where I've been, you know, working out 5 days a week, doing really, really great. And then for whatever reason, you know, a long sickness, like sometimes I get sick and I'm sick for like a month. And I don't know what's wrong with me. Or, you know, after the baby was born and I didn't work out for so long, like getting back on that wagon has been really hard. And I know I noticed a very, very dramatic difference in my sleep patterns and my energy and like my mental state when like, I don't want to get up and work out every day, but I like who I am so much less when I'm not doing that because I'm more stressed. I'm not sleeping well. I'm more anxious, like all these things that it just, to me, the benefit is, it's just huge. And some people have never felt it. So they don't realize like the difference that it can actually feel when you're in a good state, because a lot of like Americans were just wildly unhealthy. So people are just used to kind of living in that crummy state and just think it's normal.
My grief counselor, every time we meet, about every 2 weeks, the first thing she always asks is, are you still working out? And part of me wants to be like, I mean, doesn't it look like I work out?
Oh, hello.
Does it look like I'm out? But
you clearly need to wear tighter clothes to greet.
That's my like in my head. But what she's asking is, are you checking the boxes?
Yeah.
And working out is like, if you have hypertension or whatever, some sort of ailments, and you go to a GP and they don't ask you how often you're working out, find a new GP.
Go to a new GP. I agree with you on that. So how does all of this and the grief and everything you've experienced, besides how does it affect you emotionally, how does it affect you intimately?
I think we've been married almost 8 years, 8 years this next year, known each other 10 or 11. And we've definitely had these very different kind of phases in our relationship that fluctuate, I think, the level of intimacy. And I think the best thing we've figured out is just being able to talk about it, which is really hard. I mean, even when he was getting his testosterone injections, I'm like, you on a regular day are a very active human being. Like, this is a lot. And me, there's been so many stressful things on both of our sides. But for me, like, I just hunker down. I work. I don't think about anything outside of it. And that's like my protective mechanism, which doesn't allow for a lot of intimacy. Mm. And particularly in this last year, there's been a lot of like really, really hard and stressful things. And just our love languages and attachment styles are very different. And so understanding the differences and trying to Steve would love to cuddle and touch all day long. And I'm like, I like to cuddle for a minute, then I need some space. And so figuring out a way to do that and still make sure he's feeling loved and I'm getting what I needed it's just like an ongoing process, I feel like, all the time.
Yeah, I think like Mina said, communication is key. Her love language has changed more times than I can count.
Well, why would you say that?
We've almost been together 11 years.
Yeah.
It's,
what did it start with when you first met? Give me
the gifts one. Give me all the gifts. What's that one?
I think there's acts of service.
No, I know
physical
that.
Touch. But I'm trying to think of the other one.
There is one about giving gifts.
I think probably in the last, probably when we had Jack, our 5-year-old, I think she kind of let go of like materialist, you know, like I don't need to be given gifts anymore. Now it's apparently there's new languages. Yeah. I think it's kind of BS. You can't just add on to that.
I mean, if we're being really honest, like my love language is just not love. Like I just am not emotional. I'm not touchy feely. I'm not like, I have to work very hard to maintain emotional connections with friends, with family. I mean, we love each other very much and we have a great relationship, and it doesn't come easy for me to, this sounds like a dick thing to say, but to like be thoughtful. I'm just like so tunnel vision. And so there are certain things that we do, and if we don't do them, like someone is in trouble and we are pissed. Like we all, like before you leave a room, you give him a kiss. Like even if I'm going to the bathroom, like if I get up and pass him and don't give him a kiss, like those are fighting words. People ask all the time, like, why do you guys kiss 3 times? It's because it means I love you. And Steve's mom did that and like squeeze his hand 3 times. So we do that with the kids. So there are some things like that that are our norms, that are little things that we don't even talk about, but that those just happen regularly and express like the emotion and the love. But I'm definitely not the one. Like it was my birthday on Sunday, and Steve's birthday was a couple weeks ago.
Oh, happy birthday.
thank you. I love this. And so he got me a card and he's like, where are the 99 cent cards anymore? All the cards are $9. And I know you don't give a shit about cards and you're going to throw it away. And I had to waste $9 on this card.
Isn't it wild how expensive?
I am so with you on that. I have to tell you, I went to, I'm not going to say the name of the store. And I was like, I find myself like turning the cards over and I'm like, which is, you know, forget which one I like, which one is like under like $6.99.
And they're nothing special. It's just a card. It doesn't have any like butterflies that pop out of it. I have seen
no, that would be $25.
Yeah, that would be $25.
That's 25 to 30.
It's just a regular Hallmark card.
But like for Steve, that the act of the birthday card is more important than any gift I could give him. Mm. For me, I'm like, now I just have to keep the card because it's important to you. It's over there on the counter. And like now we can joke about it, but like that's very much our difference.
Right.
And so like on his birthday, I didn't get him a cake.
Bitch forgot my cake.
I didn't forget a cake.
No, you just didn't.
I was like, why would I buy him a whole cake for his birthday? He's going to be annoyed because he's a, you know, physical freak. And so, no, I didn't get him a cake. I got him a card, though. And I was like, damn it. All right.
Next year, card and cake.
You gotta next year, he gets a cake.
Next year, you got to do both.
It was like 8:30 at night. And I was like, so.
We were literally sitting on the couch. And he goes, so no cake?
Is there no cake?
I was like, huh? So, you know, that for half a second was like, okay, we got to have this conversation. Like, it didn't cross my mind.
I pulled a lot of friends and they were all like, I've never not gotten a cake from
I pulled a lot of friends. Well, now you know, Mina. Now you have a year to get the cake.
Yes, now I know to get the cake. But it's just like little things like that because we're very different. We were raised so differently, how we like interacted with our parents, you know, emotional relationships. So differently, how our comfort levels of relying on other people very different. Like I am most comfortable as an island where I rely on no one and no one relies on me. And that's just not conducive to like a healthy, loving marriage.
But over time, I think right now Mina runs 3 businesses.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point it was like 5 and I didn't get it. You know what I mean? Where it's like, what do you mean you're not in the mood? Like it, you know, it's Friday night and, you know, whatever. And I get it now because now I own my own business.
And your brain never
turns off. My brain just does not stop. And probably similar to you, like you're probably always like thinking like this, right?
10 guests.
Oh, it never stops. Yeah. It never stops.
It never stops.
And I gotta just have the physiological difference, getting my brain to stop and redirect way harder than getting his brain to stop and redirect. Just because he's a boy and he has a penis and it's easier.
Yeah. But so, I think that over the last probably year or so, I've been like more understanding, like
100%.
I can see it in her face when she's like in the zone, like at where we are now. I'm like, whew, man, if the house were to catch on fire, I'm not sure if she would even notice.
She'd still do her work.
I woke up 2 days ago at 1 o'clock and just never went back to bed because once my brain starts, I even tried to drug it. I gave it melatonin. It was like, not working. You're up all day.
But I also admire that about her drive and her will. And she's probably one of the smartest people that I know. I tell you that all the time. But as far as like the intimacy, to go back to your question, communication. And that came from Mina being like, look, man, I own fucking 5 businesses. Yeah, I don't want any dick right now. Okay, chill out.
There you go.
You know, it took me a little. I'd be like, well, what do you mean? I just got out of the shower. Yeah,
look at this.
And unfortunately, now that I'm a business owner, I kind of get it. I'm like, yeah, my brain is not thinking about.
I think the best thing for us long term is just being able to figure out how to regulate, like talk about it if we need to talk about it, because. You know, before we had kids, you know, you go out to the bars, you go out to dinner, you can have sex whenever you want, you know, you can sleep in, you can do all these things. And then you have a different life cycle when you have kids and it's, you know, try like, are they asleep? I don't know. Are they going to come in? Like then with the businesses, there's going to be these fluctuations. And then once our kids are old enough that they don't want to hang out with us anymore, like literally the other day, I was like, what are we going to do with ourselves? They were gone this weekend and we did nothing. And so I think it's just going to continue to change like that. And we're just going to continue to have conversations as need be, because it is a super important part of the relationship. And
I would say if it's Sunday early morning and I'm working out in the gym and you're still asleep, there's a 98% chance that you're going to text me and be like, stop your workout right now.
Oh, yeah. Like there's a very high chance.
Very high chance.
And my guess, Steve, is you will stop that workout.
If I don't, if I don't see the text or whatever, and it's been 5 minutes, she's like, I'm starting without you. Or,
I'm starting without you. That's
Oh gosh. I don't know if you dug into, most of them are probably deleted, but the whole conversation about sex toys has been very, it helped me block a lot of Karens when I started.
Oh, wait, was that on your, I did go into your Instagram, but I didn't see that.
I've talked about it a little bit on the podcast. So this all started because we were in Mexico a couple of years ago, and there's like the little rose that it was like TikTok viral sensation, $20. And I bought it a few years ago and I was like, this is a TikTok sensation for a reason. Mm-hmm. And we took it when we went to Mexico on a vacation, and I did this Insta story because I came back in and the maid had cleaned the room and it was on the side bed table. And I was like, well, this is awkward. And then fast forward, I got a relationship with a company, mm-hmm. and have done a couple posts with them. And when they reached out, I was like, you know what? Yeah. Like, this is something that like I'm okay with being open about. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. We're going to piss a lot of people off, but sure. So it kind of became a thing. And
women shaming women is
crazy.
The worst
thing. Comments like, your husband must not be doing his job.
No.
Like just wild stuff. I'm like, y'all need it the most because you don't even, they're like, what happened to good old and fill in the blank. And it's just, it's crazy.
Or a ton of like, I'm so disappointed in you. Yeah.
Lots of people are disappointed
I'm
in me.
Unfollowing you.
Because you talked about sex toys?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all women. Not that like a dude.
Oh yeah. No dudes. Ever. Yeah. The
just dude. In general, dudes just don't.
What I get from the dudes is, can you show us how to use it? And I'm sure. And you're blocked.
And you're blocked too.
I think that's kind of funny, but.
Oh yeah. No, it's funny. And.
But dudes don't just like in general, my fitness page for Instagram, pretty much everything that comes through is like fitness related just because the algorithm.
Right.
It could be a complete stranger, you know, like some college kid or whatever. And I'll comment and be like, get it, boy. You know, like get after it. Like I would, you know what I'm saying? Like I would never, ever in a million years think to be like, you got chicken legs.
Yeah. Women are, we I don't like, know why we're so awful to each other.
Dudes just don't do that.
I think that starts like young.
Super young.
Like if you look at junior high, which could have been the most painful place ever.
My daughter is not going through junior high. She's going to go elementary school because that's just joyous.
Straight to college.
And we're going
to
keep her at home for a few years because it is brutal. I remember my sister would come home just in tears.
Well, and this is what's so weird as a parent because I'm trying to think about so how far back does this shame cycle start?
Right.
And it's when they're super young, it's got to be, and you're not even thinking about it as a parent. Like girls factually start experimenting with their bodies way before boys. Even like Charlie's 3 and she like had a toothbrush. And I was like, what are you doing?
Oh, you're kidding. Oh my gosh.
And in my head. And so, okay, don't freak out. Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? So how do you have these conversations from that young of age, like, okay, well, we need to keep underwear on, or, you know, you can have some time by yourself if you would like some, like there's no playbook for it, but it's gotta have started from when we were so young to be like, we're ashamed of any bit of sexuality. Whereas boys are, you know, like the first time you have sex, it's this big celebration. Whereas girls, it's shameful. And
correct.
So trying to figure out that as an adult is
also
fun.
I rarely on my fitness page Instagram I rarely post anything like of me. Like you're not going to find too many like topless photos of me. Mm-hmm. There might be a few scattered in there, but if I do, I'm only looking for dudes comments. That's it. I don't give a shit what Karen in California has to say. Yeah. I want that Scott that's like, looking great, dude. That makes me feel good.
I love that.
You know what I mean? Like when a dude reassures another dude that they look good, that's like
yeah, okay, now I've definitely looked
good. Like, all right.
Now I know I look good. Now I know I look great.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I would like to share everything you expressed because I think it's so important. And I think, again, I don't want to make stereotypes or generalizations, but I think for me to see a man open up and share their feelings and give themselves permission to cry, I think will be healing for a lot of people, because I know a lot of men who are unable to go there just
yet. Yeah, it kind of makes me sad for men that feel that way. Mm-hmm. And like Mina touched upon earlier, I was just raised different. I was raised by a mother and a father that were like,
his mom's a nurse, so she's just like natural.
Yeah, like if you gotta cry, come here, let's cry. Let's cry together.
Are you doing that with Jack?
Yeah. So I think it was last night. He was laying on our bed, and I was kind of laying with him and just kind of like petting his back, just kind of having a father-son moment. And I was getting a little teary-eyed just because of my dad. And Jack was like, he's very emotionally aware. He was like, what's wrong? And I was like, nothing. And he was like, are you sad about your dad? And I was like, yeah, a little bit. And he said something that was really sweet, and I forget what it was, but one time he said, it's okay, Dad, he's up in heaven and he's okay. Yeah. And like, I sure shit didn't teach him that.
Their first nanny is like family. Her parents are, and they're very, the grandpa's a pastor. So they get a lot of that from them, which I think is comforting, particularly at such a young age, because he does, like, it's not like Steve leaves the room if he's upset. Like, I think it can be scary for kids to see their parents upset or cry. So it's just a matter of them understanding why. And Jack very much does. Charlie's 3 and she doesn't really pay attention anyways. She's kind of cold-hearted.
Right. She's cold-hearted.
But she is. Jack is his son and Charlie is my daughter. Yeah. But Jack gets it and is very empathetic. And I think,
yeah, probably like a year ago, I kind of do Jack's nighttime routine, mostly because I would prefer to. I think there's times where Mina would probably like to, and I'm like, no, that's my thing. And probably like a year ago, maybe less than a year ago, but I started saying as it was like wrapping things up, because sometimes there's a book, you know, and I would say, I'm proud to be your dad. And he, for the first, I don't know, like 3 months or so, would say, I love you too. Because he didn't know what to say. He was just like, I think that's just a way of my dad. He's saying, I love you. Mm-hmm. And a few months ago, he said, I'm proud to be your son. And like fucking waterfalls, crying. I journaled about it. And then I wrote, we have an email account set up for him that we'll occasionally email pictures and things. And I basically wrote out the whole night. It's a very long email that he'll eventually read. And he says that now to me when I say, I'm proud to be your dad.
And then if you say that to Charlie, she will say nothing or okay.
Yeah, but again,
Jack, ends of the spectrum.
Jack gets, I mean, he's very emotional, and I feel good about that, because I think later in life, because if I ever had any issues growing up, I was so comfortable just going to my mom, and my dad, but my mom was just home more, and talking to her about any issues that I had, whatever it was. And I got that from her, and I want Jack, and hopefully Charlie will eventually get this, but I want that to be the case with them, where they know,
like, where their go-to, where their safety, friends, not the,
or some other outlets, you know, where that's why a lot of young drinking and drug use comes into place, because you're just numbing feelings and things. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So we've got one kid that's super empathetic.
And our first child, who's also a COVID baby, has all the feels.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So I do this thing at the end of the podcast, this thing where I ask you these exit questions. They're sort of like fast in the sense that it's just instinctual.
I like these. It's rapid fire.
You do? Yeah. They're rapid fire. But you can give me more than one word, but it's just like, see what comes to you. All right, you ready?
Ready.
Okay. And you're both going to, Mina's like, if you could see Mina, she's like on the edge of her seat. What does true intimacy look like to you?
I first thought it was communication, which doesn't sound super sexy, but like being able, for me, because that's the hardest thing. Like, sex is easy. That's hard for me.
True intimacy. I would say authentic desire. For me, I can always tell if Mina's like, sure.
Phoning it in.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes that's just what has to happen. But when there's like authentic desire on both ends, I think that's true intimacy.
Hmm. Authentic desire. I love that. I never heard that before. Why do you think we are so obsessed with sex?
Because we're just monkeys.
We're just monkeys.
Growing
shit at each other.
Yeah, we're just monkeys grooming each other, right? Like, that's like the truest sign of submission, and I want to please you. And that's, you know, I mean, that's what we are.
I think the whole world of social media has just like sexualized, like, it's just so many things that now everyone sees and knows everything. And so I think that has kind of glamorized the sex. I don't know, the conversation around it, like what's sexy, what's not. Like, I mean, Lord knows how confusing porn has made it for so many people about what it actually should look like or can. Right. But I think that like idea of public consumption of it, instead of being just something that's a conversation between the people it matters about, like, what does it look like for us? What are our feelings? What are the things we like doing? Instead, it's this, well, I saw this happen this way, and it looked really sexy when so-and-so did this way. That just kind of like muddies the water.
Right. What's something in your after? We talked about so many afters in this, actually, but what's something in your after that you're still working on?
Everything.
Everything. There you go.
Yeah.
Steve?
I'm thinking about the question. So like, what's something that in the future I'm working on?
No, like for the after, like, so for me, mine would be like, what was something in my after having been a breast cancer survivor? So we did touch on so many different things. So it's a little more open-ended, but with everything that you've been through, gotcha. If you want to take it to the infertility, but there's so much more. Because I think in our world, people go through things and then people can be like with you for like a month or two. And then everybody thinks, okay, you're good. Like, I know that with me, with my cancer, right? Like, I was done. I had my surgeries. I'm back out in the world. So it's over. But to me, it's never over.
Yeah, no, there's a death, you get a casserole train for 2 weeks, and then you move on.
Or... Did you say a casserole train? That's right. So yeah. The reason for me the podcast is so important is no one really talks about the after.
Yeah, it's a good question. That's why I'm trying to take my time. I think that I'm already a really empathetic person. Like, I'll use the cliche, Hallmark movie, Hallmark.
I'd be like, he's overly empathetic.
Yeah, sometimes. If I see somebody struggling, it hurts me. I think everybody's struggling. Everybody's struggling with something. And just remembering that daily, like when I go to pick up the kids at school every day, I'm typically annoyed by something that somebody is doing.
Driving stupid, parking stupid.
And what I try to remind myself is that they're struggling with something.
Mm. That does help. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe not like in that direct moment they're struggling with that something, but no matter what, they're struggling with something deep down somewhere. Everybody. You pass 100 people on the street, 100 people are struggling.
They're just like giving grace.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, like, just remembering that, though.
But I think that's why, again, back to me doing my podcast and you doing your podcast and having these conversations, no one really talks about this. So we basically just see all the pretty. I do think this is why people have a more difficult time, because we only see the pretty. And if no one's talking about what's really happening, people think they're alone and they're the only one. Mm-hmm. They think no one else feels that way. It's just me.
Yeah. And that's a dangerous place to be.
Very.
Yeah. A lot of times if I used to be worse, but if I go down the rabbit hole of like negative comments on some of Mina's Instagram posts, I just want to be like, who hurt you? Hmm. Hurt people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Hurt people.
And just remembering that, I think for me, is important. And I, I'll tell Mina, not everybody's lost like their best friend, their mom, their dad, their sister in a matter of like a few years. But for some people, losing their dog is like the end of the world. And
yes.
And there's no need to compare.
That's right.
Right. Your hurt is just as strong as my hurt.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, because some people will go, oh, well, I haven't been through what you went through, so I feel bad saying this to you. And it's like, no, it's yours. That's how you feel. And that means as much as what I feel. It is the comparing. It is the comparing. When I was going through cancer, I didn't have chemo or radiation. And I went to a support group where everybody did have chemo and radiation. I never went back, but I felt guilty. I had a moment of going, well, I'm losing my breast to cancer and I lost my mother to cancer, but I quite haven't suffered like these other people. Mm. Right? It's like that comparing of pain.
Yeah.
Steve's eyes are spinning. But I can see you thinking.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. It's
the idea of the struggle. Like, they've earned the right to fill in the blank. If you've had a kid, you've earned the right to have a tummy tuck. If you went through chemo, they earned the right to be there and air their grievances, and you didn't earn that right enough because you didn't go through chemo. So it's just this like,
but that was coming from me. I felt that.
Yeah. So like, you haven't struggled enough to be able to earn a place there. And I think for some reason we just have this idea that like, it has to be hard, and whoever has it the hardest is the most like admirable person. And that's just not, it's not how it shakes out in real life.
It's kind of like survivor's guilt is what you're
correct
explaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like whoever suffers the most wins.
Yeah. It's pretty messed up.
Right. There's nothing to win.
No one's winning then.
No one's winning. What is something people would be shocked to learn about what you went through?
I think people would just be shocked. Just the version of me that most people know and is very palatable and pleasant, well as who I am now, my life growing up. I think a lot of people see me as, you know, my dad was a doctor, my mom was a lawyer. Like I went to a good school, I went to college, then I, you know, got my own TV show and I'm rich and I have kids. And, you know, some of those things are true, some of them there aren't. But there's also way more things that go into like me being the person I am that aren't pretty and that no one will ever know about because I'll never talk about. And I think that kind of goes into what Steve's saying with like giving people grace. Like you don't know people's experiences, even if you think you do, even if like I am very, very open and there's still some things that aren't meant to be shared and aren't going to be shared. And if they were, maybe you wouldn't say the mean thing because then you'd feel sorry for me. And that's kind of messed up. But I think just that whole picture, if everyone can kind of keep that in mind more, that like there's so much more than what you see for anyone. Mm-hmm. So judging people, and we just can't trust what we see anymore with AI, you know, that just that idea of giving grace, I think people would be, I'm kind of the villain in a lot of people's stories sometimes. And I think I wouldn't be. Maybe a little more.
I'm shocked to hear that you're the villain in people's stories. I watch you on HGTV. You're just so cheery and happy. I was watching with my roommate yesterday. You just pick up. I was like, my God. I don't even know what the instruments are called, but you pick something up and you tear down a wall. I'm like, look at her go.
Yeah. And I loved it. Like, I probably am happy in that moment. And, you know, I look cheery, but, just with the show ending and all the fallout from that, it's changed what people think of me, I think.
How is that for you?
It's hard because it's very quickly you can see how like fair weather fans people are. Everyone was, you know, loved the show. It was filling so many needs for so many people. And one of the things for me that really was like that I could hang my hat on, because sometimes it feels like you're a dancing monkey when you're making a TV show. But I would have women who came up to me and were in chemo in the hospital and would watch my show and like, you got me through chemo. Or I sat with my mom while she was dying for 6 months in hospice and we watched your show together. And it was our bright light in the day. Like those things this is like the most amazing and saddest thing to hear in the world, but that the show has the power to do that for people and shows in general, TV, like, cause we don't really watch TV. So I don't understand that in my brain, how it could have that much of an impact or effect on someone. And now that kind of that's not there anymore, it's just this weird dynamic. Because I am trying to be open about it. And, you know, I love what I did. I love the show. And there's all these other things that I've not been able to be or talk about or say to respect that part of my life. But now we're kind of rolling into a new part and it's not that version anymore. Like no one's going to say, you know, my mom and I bonded together over listening about your vibrator episode on your podcast.
Right.
It's just a little different.
And change is not always easy.
No, people hate change. It's very uncomfortable for everyone that's part of it.
But I also think, I always say this, that we don't grow when we're comfortable.
No. Well, I'm very uncomfortable this last year. So.
Well, there's lots of growing meaning. But don't you think that's when we grow? We grow when we're uncomfortable.
It's 100%. The only time that you do grow.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
You have to go through discomfort. Yeah. Period.
Right. And I think that's...
Yeah, I remember the question.
Do you remember?
I think for me would be that I was like the anchor at my mom and dad's funerals. Will you agree? As far as like just coordinating...
Yeah.
Speeches.
Yeah.
And again, Jordan Peterson has a quote. Obviously, I didn't know this quote until recently, but he said, you have to be the strongest person at your father's funeral.
Mm-hmm. May I ask what your father's name is?
Rick.
Just because we keep talking about him and I.
Yeah, Rick.
Rick.
Yeah, he was a good dude. Yes. He was one of the good ones. It's just, any loss, of course, is awful, but he fell down the stairs, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like it was a 9-month process in the hospital that we watched.
Well, and there's a lot of, there probably still is, but definitely was a lot of guilt earlier on because Steve's mom had passed away about 6 months before that. And I think we all knew, like, Rick was ride or die. He would follow Sally down any rabbit hole. And if that rabbit hole was not being on this earth anymore, he would do that.
Right.
And we were trying to get him to move in with us and spend more time with us, you know, maybe like be here in the apartment. And, you know, he just wanted to be home by himself. And I think much with his sister, there was a lot of like, if we had pushed harder, if we had done this, maybe this wouldn't have happened, which is all terrible to let your brain even wander there. But
yeah,
it just, particularly Steve's dad and sister, felt like it was so preventable if we had tried harder, even though we know that's probably not true. It fucks with you.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to start with Steve because I think this question will piggyback onto what I just asked. What is something you would say to someone going through what you went through or what you are going through?
Just like everything else, everything, this too shall pass. Yeah. And that was something that my mom used to tell me all the time. I think the first time she like ever told me was when I went through like my first like high school breakup, you know, and it was kid love and the end of the world. You know, we've all experienced that. And I remember her saying, "This too shall pass."
I'm going to cut the first girl that hurts Jack. It's going to be ugly. I talk about it all the time. I'm like, my sweet, sensitive little boy, some girl is going to rip his heart out and then she's going to have to die.
And that's the way to end this podcast.
And that's how Mina ended up in jail.
And there you go.
Sex After is hosted by me, Amy Marks, and is produced by Chris DeRosa. If you enjoy the show, I'd love to hear from you. DM me on Instagram at Amy Marks and Sex After Podcast, or send me a message on my website at amymarks.com. And please follow, rate, and review the show and help us spread the word. Until next time.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I really hope you loved these last two episodes. We had such an interesting time recording them. And I really wanted to share them with you. So leave a note, click the link in the show notes and let me know what you guys think about these podcast drop-ins that I've done with other people. Comment, I'd love some feedback. If you love them, if you hate them, more things you want us to talk about, things you want me to talk about less, maybe whatever you want to say. You guys know it's no holds bar. So click the link in the show notes, leave me some info and I'll see you guys next Tuesday.